Welcome to Not a Big Deal, the podcast aimed to make first-time marketers feel less alone. I'm Lucy, and this is Kelly, and thank you all for joining us again, episode 3.
Welcome.
Kelly, can you tell me about how your week has been?
Week's been good, honestly. It is summer in London. Well, it's feeling like summer over the weekend. Right now, it's a little gray. It's when London really comes to life. So I'm happy. It's July.
I would say that also it's when London comes to life and when it's really hard to justify not having a drink outside.
100%. There's no way I can't. Like, I'm like, oh, I wish I could skip. Maybe I shouldn't talk about this. I'm like a fucking alcoholic. Can we start over? For 2 weeks, and I don't think I can even do it for 2 days, is what I was gonna say.
No, but that is my problem at the moment, because I'm pre-wedding, keep being like, I'm gonna minimize my drinking as much as possible so I don't feel like, I don't know, bloated or like alcohol tasting a bit gross, it sleep good,
yeah,
and then I keep being like, oh, I shouldn't do that, and I can't say no to a drink in the sun.
I physically can. It actually feels like illegal.
But my question would be, is this a London thing, a London UK thing, or is it the same when you were in the US?
I think it's the same, but I think maybe you appreciate the sun even more here.
Because am I right in thinking that you grew up in California?
Yeah,
in San Francisco. It's like sunny all the time.
San Francisco itself is not sunny all the time, but yeah, any of like the surrounding areas are usually quite nice, at least in the summer. But
my other American friend always said that the big thing in the UK is also that everybody drinks, like stands outside the pub and drinks. It's like such a weird phenomenon.
Yeah. I remember the first summer I had here, because also to drink midday, like the pubs in the city are like overflowing with like people in work clothes at like 2 p.m. on a Tuesday. And I'm like, what? You can go back after a pint and work? Like, I could not. So I just had to abstain. But I was like, this is crazy. This would never happen in San Francisco.
It was a really weird British thing I didn't know I missed. And when I moved back from Amsterdam, I was working in Fitzrovia. And they've got some like quite nice, like again, like kind of city vibes. Everyone's wearing a suit. We're always talking about men in suits or people in suits on this podcast.
Looking for a man in finance with a pint on a sunny day.
And I remember then seeing it and being like, oh, that is so quintessential, like British London vibes. And I just thought like, oh, I really missed it.
I think it is. It's so quintessential.
But I would be the same as you. I was not good if I had a drink and then went back to work. I just wanted to chat.
You just want to have a good time, you know? So that's all. I'll save the drink for, you know, when I log off for the day. And then I can probably enjoy myself.
So that's basically what we're doing at the moment. But tonight we've managed to abstain because we are recording the podcast in the evening. It's a cloudy day. So guys, we've not had a drink before we've started recording. Yeah.
Bob is not calling my name.
Yeah. Okay, so I found some trending piece of content. Again, a TikTok. It's kind of similar to some stuff that we touched on last week around pipeline and what that was doing in terms of having that as a priority. And then where does creativity and brand fit in? And it was something that I think we were both saying, like, we know we need it, but we're not too sure how to do it. So I'm going to play the audio now. This is Camilla Moore. Do you know her?
No. But she looks like she was someone based on the number of followers.
Yeah, so I've been seeing she's got like a marketing related podcast, and she says the internet's favorite brand director. She's got a podcast, so yeah, that's Camilla Moore.
Mom.
And she had Rory Sutherland on, who I'm feeling bad that I don't know who that is. Maybe I should actually. I
looked him up. Basically, said everyone says he's like a marketing legend.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of, he's now up in my algorithm now I've watched this one thing. I think
TikTok is the TikTok. Is that the kids say the talk? I made that up. The talk is figuring out that you're marketing girly, and they're surfacing it all now. It does sound like I've had a plan already, to be fair, but I really promise that happened.
Okay, so I'm going to play us the trending.
What do you think the biggest problem that's facing branding right now that you're seeing at the highest level?
I think the biggest problem is the ROI, false god of perfect ROI calculation and prediction in advance. That effectively it's very, very good to measure. My origins are in direct marketing. Measuring is fantastic, okay? The downside of working in direct marketing was always that you weren't allowed to do anything you couldn't perfectly measure. And so you were confined to doing things at the bottom of the funnel. And I think the biggest problem in business, and I would argue in government, is that the treasury or indeed the finance function is extremely unwilling to invest in anything which has the slightest degree of speculative value. And so we end up, particularly in the Anglo-Saxon world, I think, with a kind of efficiency-driven race to the bottom rather than an opportunity-driven race to the top. The idea that actually your job is to do the same for less rather than to do better for more.
It's the opportunity cost.
And your identification there of the phrase opportunity cost is fascinating, because here's the problem, okay? Finance people don't really want to make the company money over time. They just thrive on certainty. They just love predictability.
They love and they the
try,
certain.
And they try and make the world resemble their fantasy of perfect certainty, perfect quantification, perfect measure. Okay. Now, here's the problem, okay? A cost is really quantifiable and really visible. And if you cut a cost, it delivers predictable gains almost instantaneously. Mm. An opportunity cost, a missed opportunity, by its very nature, is somewhat nebulous. Mm. Now, if you're completely unwilling to embrace the uncertain, you will never pursue any opportunity, any incremental opportunity at all. All you will try and do is serve your existing customer base ever more cheaply until a weird crunch point where they get pissed off and go away.
Should we summarize the TikTok for our listeners?
Yeah. Do you want to have a go? I mean, you were writing notes.
I had a few things to respond to. That was why. But basically, he's talking about, so his history is in direct marketing, where in order to get more budget and prove your worth, essentially everything has to be measured. And so with that, all of your activities became focused on bottom of funnel activities, because that's where you directly drive leads. But he was saying that actually is like steering us away from doing other things that are important. Like, we become too obsessed with measurement and ROI. And that there's an opportunity cost to that. And that's nebulous and hard to measure. Did I miss anything?
No, I thought that was a very good summary. The second time you've listened to it?
She's here. She's present.
Wow, she's a natural presenter.
I think what was interesting to me about that is, well, I totally agree, but I also think, especially in a early stage startup, is like the idea of like time to ROI. Like, so maybe some things you do want to calculate, like some bottom of funnel stuff. But I feel like sometimes our team is not patient. Like, we act too impatiently. So it could actually be bottom of funnel, but we've given it 2 weeks. And we're like, oh my God, we didn't get any leads. It obviously didn't work. And I'm like, we would probably need like 90 days to even get. So I was sort of just thinking about like time to ROI. But then same with the other side of that is, it doesn't mean that because you do something that you can't measure, it doesn't mean you shouldn't do it.
Mm.
No, that's nebulous, to use Rory's word. I don't even know if what I said made sense, but
no, it did. But I think it gave me this feeling of like, I agree, the non-trackable kind of big thinking stuff is the creative stuff, the opportunity, the stuff that's going to like catch people's attention, is definitely the stuff that always gets me excited and I'm like passionate about. But what it made me feel, again, if I was a head of marketing listening to this podcast and listening to what they're saying, is like, but I'm getting asked about pipeline, I'm getting pressure to make sure I'm not spending too much, I have a budget, and then you're saying to me, don't do that, go and do a really creative project, like, make sure you're getting opportunity. Like, it does get to a point where you start to feel like you're just in this push and pull, and how do you win then?
Yeah, 100%. My experience is everyone wants pipeline now, and so everything needs to be like an immediate converter.
Yeah.
Whereas I worry that then we lose sight of doing things for the future, and eventually the future creates pipe for now. You know, and so if you're not doing awareness stuff now, are you going to bite yourself in the bum in the future? Because still no one knows you, and it all sort of like is a cyclical wheel that feeds into it. It just feeds onto itself.
And then I'm wondering also with team structure, right? If you're the one person in marketing, and okay, if you have like kind of a healthy budget and a CEO or like senior the team that was like kind of ready to be a bit risky, I guess you could like outsource it all, find an agency and like completely. And I guess when I've worked it on agency side, that's a lot of what they would get to do is like, okay, you just do the stuff that makes us like cool and it's branding, and we'll work out like the kind of more direct marketing and be responsible for that. So maybe that's what you have to look at, is like it's two separate functions in a way.
Yeah.
Then I think as the head of marketing, you are generally then the one who's responsible for direct. And then maybe you have a head of brand or an agency that then is coming in to have that more creative side. But that's so hard to justify the budget of, especially with agencies that can be so expensive.
So expensive.
And then ultimately, if you're at a startup, you're the one person, you are expected to be doing both.
Yeah. I wonder if maybe a way to think about it is sort of like a spectrum scale, like a percentage scale. Like sometimes, you know, if pipeline isn't going well or you need more, maybe you're surging on pipeline. So actually like 80% of your job is short term and you have like 20% for the long term awareness. And then once you sort of solve that problem, then you sort of slide your gear maybe a bit more back in the middle, because you are only one person. And so you only have 100% of your time, and you can't do 100% of the now and 100% of the future. You have to sort of go where the business needs, but you never want to turn the tap fully off on either, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I guess it's that 80-20 actually.
Yeah.
But yeah. I guess also, I've come from companies as well where the like growing the audience base wasn't a problem.
Yeah,
they had a lot more and they were profitable, so then actually they had loads of budget and time and wanted to do loads of brand activities, and it did work.
Yeah,
but I guess then there was a bigger team, there was a CMO that was like had a really like high stakes in the company, was backed by like all of the senior leadership, so it wasn't really it was a different position than when I was responsible.
Yeah, completely. I think this ties into what we're going to talk about today, which is
I was thinking, whoa, what a great segue.
Exactly, how to build like your marketing reputation internally, and I think how you're perceived or the marketing function is perceived can influence what you spend your time on and how effective you can be. Like it can be the company sort of dictating to you what to do, or you can't get things done because there's a misalignment on perception. So yeah, Lizzie, why is like building a marketing department, why is it hard to build a marketing department and influence a company, and why is it so important?
I actually saw, I've searched to try and find where I heard this, saw this. I mean, it's probably TikTok. I think my TikTok addiction with also the marketing algorithm is really going to come to like out in this. Your alcohol addiction and my TikTok addiction are like coming out in this podcast. Oh god. So I heard this thing the other day, and what they were saying is, why is it that marketing doesn't kind of get the credit for why everyone decides to go with a company? So for example, if you think of when you're purchasing something, it's everything to do with marketing while you make that decision. Like of course product can help, and of course sales can nudge, but like making that initial contact, being able to like make the decision between that and a competitor. Like all of those things are marketing, but for some reason there is some misalignment that marketing somehow doesn't get credit for that in some way. And I think that that's probably a good way to like start, yeah, the conversation around how we felt internally in like our different marketing roles and what that, how that played into where marketing was kind of seen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of times, just sort of thinking about this is like, I think a lot of people you work with, their perception of marketing is likely formed actually around past marketing teams they worked with.
Mm.
So they might come in with like preconceived notions. If they worked at a big company that did a lot of brand awareness, maybe they think that's how it is. So they worked at a startup that had a huge volume of leads. Mm. They think that you're a failure because they don't, when actually maybe your market is a lot smaller and deal size is much bigger. So your lead volume is normal. And so I think there just is a lot of continuous education of what marketing can do and the impact it can have.
Mm.
And marketing is not just like putting your logo on swag. It's quite, it should be a super strategic role to the business. Also, another reason why it's so important is it's a really cross-functional role. Like, top of mind, it must be one of the roles that works with the most other teams in the business. You know, you're working with product, with sales, with customer success, with your executive team, all to get things done. And so if you have sort of a reputation internally, or marketing is perceived in a certain way, it might actually block you from getting things done, or from not being included in things that marketing needs to be included in. So it can be really, really tricky.
I think also similar to what you're saying around how people, like where they've come from, what they've done before, I think also because marketing is so varied in its role, and also it's about like copy, design, like taste to some degree, like how people perceive the company, it's also quite a subjective role a lot of the time. So I always found marketing got like the most feedback because you'd put something up or the website or all of these different things, and people would find it kind of easier to, like, I would very much stay in my lane, I think, a lot of the time, you know, or I'd feel like, oh, I've got no idea about that code that the devs put in, so like I'm not going to give feedback on that. Whereas I think a lot of the time you kind of do get much more feedback because people just see it as like it's just more subjective, I think, more yeah. People have opinions.
Totally. I think that's where maybe to have like your ammo behind you, it helps to be a customer expert, is you can say, well, this is our ICP and these are the personas when we know about them. And so the more you like talk to customers and do customer story interviews, you learn, I think it helps you justify that subjective, because it's like, you've made these decisions with a lot of rationale behind them. Everyone just might not see all that research. And so anyway, that's sort of like, I guess, a little tip if you're finding that people are giving lots of input or challenging things. It's like, you should know customers super well. And that's why you're doing things you're doing, because you're trying to attract more of them.
100%. I felt like that was like the biggest change for me, was being like, no, I actually have to have the like outside perspective that the internal teams don't have. I have to be speaking to customers to understand like, what are the problems? What are they getting blocked on? And like, how can I help to communicate that and make sure it's kind of flowing through? Okay, so we actually broke down some marketing myths, and we're going to tell you what we found our marketing myths were. Do you want to hit us with the first marketing myth?
I'm going to hit you with the first myth. So the myth is that marketing is only responsible for leads. And I think this one a lot of people might get is, marketing is sort of viewed like a gumball machine. Like, what you put in, you get out. You're just cycling through. All you do is lead gen. And to bust that myth, especially if you're having this challenge in your companies, is marketing actually is a life cycle. So you should also be able to retain and re-engage customers. It's from like awareness all the way through advocacy. And sometimes, especially if you're a small team, you can't actually hit every part of the customer lifecycle because you just are limited in terms of bandwidth and what you can actually do to go where the business needs are. But I think, I think that's a myth that I've had a challenge before is even if you're focused on pipeline right now, that's fine if that's where the business needs you, but just making it clear that there's other areas you can have impact on.
For sure. And other areas that you need, I think like you said this before, but like that you need people to help you with a lot of the time.
Yeah.
It's like within that, if you're seen as like you just have this one thing and then you've actually got all these other things going on, like I'm really struggled sometimes to show the actual breadth of the amount of work that needed to go into the different things we were doing.
Yeah. I had a mentor suggest to make a table with each of the sort of funnel stages, all the way from like awareness through advocacy or nurture or whatever you want to call it. And actually to help build awareness of where you can have an impact, putting red, yellow, green, like in a status column. And so something you think is red, just like know why you're not prioritizing it. So you can say, here's sort of how I would evaluate these areas we can influence. We're focusing here because of these reasons. And that's just a subtle way to say over and over and over, here's all the things we can do. Here's why we're prioritizing this now.
Well, and you'd like share that to the team and then your boss.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to go with the next myth, which was marketing is only creative and kind of only is there to make swag.
I had an engineer tell me that one time. That's why I had to put that one in there. Is he was like, marketing can't just make me a billboard. All you do is swag with logos. And I was like, oh, honey.
I also definitely had this like slight chip on my shoulder of like marketing is this like fluffy, fun thing. And that there was like maybe like not much strategy. I don't know how much of that is like also just a chip on my shoulder in some way. But I really found it quite difficult to either not get like defensive about it when people would kind of hint like that, but also make sure that I wasn't somehow actually feeding into that stereotype, because I'd want the team to be excited about a creative project.
Yes, it's sort of it's both sides. Again, I can't help but think of like all the different elements of marketing's responsible for, and it is leads, it is creative. Maybe you do also own swag because it's a subset of brand, but I see what you're saying is like the creative projects are just as important, and it doesn't mean it's any less important than demand generation or impacting conversion metrics. And so if you want to work on a creative project and that's what's invigorating for your team and what the business needs, you should do it. But you then don't want it to be like, oh, all marketing does is fluffy stuff.
Right, exactly.
You're just like writing taglines and choosing colors.
Yeah. And just like, look, everyone's looking at you like, oh, you've just got a fun job.
Yeah.
Which is not really the case. Sometimes.
How did you bust that myth? Like, what did you do internally when you were doing creative projects? We wanted to show sort of like the range you had. I'm totally putting you on the spot with this one.
Oh, no. I think it was a mix of owning it to some degree and understanding that marketing had this quite unique role. And sometimes you could really get the company excited about a project. I remember we did this like big outdoor campaign and I printed off like all these big pictures and put them in the office the day we launched. And everyone was really jazzed about it. And I liked that was the case, that I could get everyone like excited about the company and what we were doing. And I think like influencing internally in that sense and making sure that an outside launch is also internal is like a great thing. But I also found that I probably got more technical as I grew in the role. I could spout out some conversion rates or some data, or actually maybe similar to what you're saying, I really became an advocate for the customer, and therefore even if I had a creative idea, I had like a very good rationale as to why we were doing it.
It makes total sense. I like what you said, thinking about sometimes an outside launch is also internal. I think you're so right. It's like, that's a part of bringing the company on the journey with you. and you're building like camaraderie, and there's so much that goes around that. I like that. Should we get in with number three?
Mm.
The myth that marketing is not connective tissue and doesn't work with everyone. So definitely not true, as we know. The beauty and challenge of marketing is that you wear so many different hats. You're constantly context switching based on who you're working with. And so like they need to know the value that you add in their context. I think is really helpful. And I think with a lot of this, it's honestly just being patient, and like trust and reputation is not going to be built in like one fell swoop. It's a series of little projects together with product managers, a couple of feature launches, and then, you know, they know when and how to bring you in. It's just sort of slowly laying the groundwork and slowly permeating into every team that you need to work with, but it's not easy.
I also was going to say that another myth we've got, the next myth we've got, is that like marketing has to be kind of upbeat, this kind of personality hire to some degree, or maybe I'm completely projecting in this myth, but I definitely found that I had to kind of always bring the energy, was always kind of in a good mood, was good with people, and therefore it did become this kind of pressure I felt. When I was just reading that myth to read it out, though, I would love to know if, wait, one, do you feel like that sometimes?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's complicated because I think that you have to be really collaborative. So yeah, you do have to have a personality where you are easy to work with. But something I was just writing down is something I've learned is you can be good to work with, but you shouldn't always care. Like, it doesn't mean you always have to be liked or be agreeable or to not push back. Mm. I think that's something I've been learning a lot, is like I can still be deemed like collaborative and someone that people like to work with, and I can also still push back and challenge things and ask thoughtful questions, and that doesn't impact like my own reputation or the reputation of the team. If anything, that elevates us, that you're not just a yes person.
Yeah, I definitely wasn't a yes person. Well, no, sorry, I probably was to some degree, but I definitely had opinions, but I felt I had to somehow be happy or like bringing some kind of like marketing flair. But I also wonder, I mean, not to start bringing the sexism up, but sexism, would that be the right way? But like the roles at work, I wonder how much I felt it as a woman, whereas I wonder if you had a male head of marketing, how much that would, the likability factor, the kind of energy fluffy marketing factor, how much they would also feel that. So actually, if we've got any male head of marketing listeners, I would absolutely love to know if you feel that that's also the case.
I would love to hear about that too. I totally agree, because obviously we don't have that representation here, and I think it'd be fascinating. And also, like, who else do you work with? Like, there's so many other dynamics within the workplace of gender and seniority and experience, and it all plays into sort of like the role that you feel like you have to fill personality wise to get stuff done.
For sure.
The fifth and final myth is that you have to be the one to solely build reputation marketing. This can feel like a very lonely and scary role if you take it on alone, and it is not just you to build a reputation of marketing. I think your co-founders or your CEO, whatever, the like senior executive team should be champions of marketing if you can. Hopefully they hired you for a reason. They know what they need you to do. And so it is totally on them to, you know, if it's necessary, set company level priorities that are marketing wise or unblock things where you need.
Right.
Something else I've just recently learned is even how to get buy-in even with those leaders if you need is is actually sometimes it's okay to get external validation. Like if you have a marketing mentor or a VC you work with and you're having a hard time getting buy-in for priorities that you believe in, like it's actually okay to bring one of them in and pre-brief them and say, here's what I think. Do you agree? And if they say yes, like, okay, can you help me convince these people? And sometimes that can help build your business case. And then that just, again, slowly, even though it might be frustrating that you weren't listened to the first time, like whatever, and do what you need to do to get it done. And then it means that hopefully the next time it's that much easier and that much easier. Like we've sort of been saying, it's not going to be all at once. It's just going to be slowly chipping away. And the first time someone told me like, you can bring in external validation, pre-brief them, I was like, that is cheeky AF. I'm here for it.
No, but I think also recognizing your ego when you've been like saying to your boss something for ages, and then all of a sudden they have a call with like some other CEO that they're like friends with, and then he'd be like, come to me, or they would come to me and be like, oh, I've got this idea because I spoke to this other CEO. I'd be fuming.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we put together some advice of actually what we think could help or what's helped us. I think similar, just like leading on of what you've just said, finding internal advocates or champions for marketing was a huge thing in terms of influencing the company. For me, there was definitely people who I saw either had experience in marketing, had worked with marketing really closely before in other companies, and therefore wanted to like collaborate and work with me. Those like well-respected people in the company, knowing that they like would have a chat with me, we'd feel on the same like lines about things. And similar to what you're saying, they'd be able to influence conversations maybe I wasn't in about marketing. And I found that that was actually really helpful in terms of the reputation of what the team was doing.
Yeah, 100%. I'm with you. I think another thing you had touched on is that you present in all hands. Do you want to talk about that a bit?
I did it all the time. I really tried to push the team to do it. I did it. I tried to make sure that my, maybe the fluffy creative stuff, actually, my slides were always like really well designed. I really tried to stand out in terms of the team and the company, in terms of trying to get people's attention about what we were doing and understand and like the understanding about it. So I think sometimes you can feel isolated and it's a bit scary. Again, with this idea that marketing is really easy to have an opinion on, I would definitely feel a little bit nervous about doing it, but I really pushed myself to do it a lot and be visible and show what the team was doing.
I think that's awesome. And I think it's normal and great to even care about how slides look. Like I think I heard this quote, I'm just sounding such a loser, from a Peloton instructor, was how you do one thing is how you do everything. And it's so true. Like if you're trying to show a quality and an execution bar that you have, your all hands is your way in a small way to show that. And it's like, we're thoughtful, we're creative, we're detail oriented. I think it's so great that you have had regular all hands where you could step up and show what you guys were doing. That's,
it's the marketing internally. Literally.
Something else we talked about is identifying quick wins for each team. So sort of what we were saying earlier is if you have, trust is going to be built in small moments. And so if you're new to the role or are trying to focus on this, it's what does each team care about and what's something that you can help with and what's a quick win that you can deliver, whether it's, you know, the sales team doesn't have a deck to present. Okay. What does a good deck look like? Spin that up. It's sort of like do what you can a bit to help each team.
Yeah. And to get some kind of buy-in, don't be like a doormat, but definitely see where you can to help out problems that other teams are having and then show value in that way as well.
Yeah. Maybe sort of also with that to complement it is make proactive suggestions. It's not like you're going around like a little like puppy dog. Like, what can I do for you? It's like, hi, I've listened to a couple calls on Gong and I feel like what might be helpful is a deck. Do you agree?
Cool.
Yeah, you do. Okay. I'll deliver that. I'll bear it back. Or let's build it together. Whatever.
Mm. Or I just did a Canva template and was like, here you go.
That's awful too.
edit it how you want, but like, I think you should at least have the background like this. Like, let's just start simple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Got building decks like that is it's a never-ending problem sometimes. Okay, I'm going to say, don't let your insecurity about the perceptions of marketing make you overcompensate. Maybe this is actually similar to what we just said about the doormat stuff. There was a point where I just had to let it go as well.
It's like, later.
I've got my ambassadors. I'm presenting in the all hands. I'm trying to be helpful to people. If all of those aren't working and people just don't get marketing, then like, what can I do? I think the best thing, like you're saying, if you have buy-in from the senior team and you feel supported in that way, I feel then that that is probably one of the most important things. And then these other things are secondary in terms of how you get people kind of on side and working together. But ultimately, some people aren't going to get it. They're not going to enjoy it. They're going to feel that you kind of just like bop around making TikToks all day.
And that's like, okay. Yeah, I agree.
It can be your ego or your insecurity about that can really bug you. It definitely bugged me. Or actually, do you know what it would do? It would throw me off in meetings.
Why?
Because I'd feel people had this perception of me in marketing, or me and the team. So like, even sometimes if someone in my team was talking, and therefore I would be not like authentic in my thoughts, or I'd maybe like hold back a bit, or I'd maybe get nervous about presenting something creative. And I actually had to sit myself down one day and tell myself, like, you actually don't know for a fact that person is thinking that.
Yeah, so true.
So you might have the assumption that they think marketing's rubbish and it doesn't matter or whatever.
Yeah.
But I did have to get to a point where I told myself, like, you can't keep just going around thinking everyone thinks you're like fluffy and not contributing in some way. Like, that's also not going to be helpful.
Sometimes you just need to give fewer shits, actually. Maybe that's our summary. Care to a degree, like, do what you can, but then at the end of the day, I still love something that you said in one of our past podcasts, where if you got fired tomorrow, you'd know that you did everything that was aligned to what you thought was right, and you had the reasons why. And I think that goes back to this. It's like, do the best you can, but like, sometimes you can't shift an entire company or change a founder's mind, and all you can do is control what you do, how you believe in yourself, and the work that you do. And at the end of the day, maybe that's what matters most.
For sure. I think that's the most, maybe then it's the thing, again, I don't want us to always be repeating the same thing, but I think when you're on your own as a head of marketing in a small company like that, the kind of internal faith you have to have in yourself is so, I've never had to have it like that in a different role.
Yeah. I agree. And yeah. I think when I first started, if I had tough conversations with anyone that was challenging, I would leave the call and like want to cry. And now I just leave the call and I just laugh.
Yeah.
You know, not to their face, because that would be mean. And everyone I work with, I love. But
and Kelly will make me edit that out.
No, we'll leave it. We'll leave it. Anyone who knows will know. But yeah, I think it's flipping how you respond to things.
For sure.
I don't know if we've lost the plot at the end here. Now we're just like, advice. Pew, pew,
pew. Well, we also said that sometimes we want to give resources for advice, but actually I felt like we both this time felt like we actually had good advice.
Yeah.
So you've got the resources, our notes.
The resources will be the notes. But also, if you have any other things that you've done in your company, please tell us or comment on our LinkedIn posts. Like, I think this is such helpful stuff to share. Because with marketing, you can be really tactical on some of this stuff too.
Definitely. So we thought we'd mix it up next episode instead of
that was so weird. Why did I just think that was cool? I instant regret.
If anyone's wondering what Kelly just did, it was kind of like a DJ remix movement. I love it.
We just talked about giving viewers shit, so I really applied that liberally and immediately.
We came off of episode 2 and thought, we're spending a lot of time about saying stuff that we don't know what to do. And although I think that's great, and we definitely want everyone to know that we feel insecure and have imposter syndrome all the time, I actually thought it might be helpful for us to do a little deep dive on stuff that we do feel comfortable about. So next episode, I'm going to be interviewing Kelly on all things product marketing. So she can give some like expert opinions, be our resource. We're going to dig into her brain. So yeah, that's our next episode up. Are you going to do the hate, like, subscribe, comment?
Oh yeah. What is it, like? Oh yeah, ratings, please.
Guys, ratings. Like, subscribe, rate, review us, comment,
engage, send feedback. We just get way too many CTAs.
And then I'll sit in a meeting and be like, we can only ask people to do one thing.
Okay, what's our one ask, Lucy? You gotta pick one.
Honestly, at the moment, it's just listen to us. If you enjoy it and then just listen to us, that would be really nice.
And come back next week.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. I agree. Although we do also love the validation of liking, subscribing, sharing, commenting, and reading. So if you find yourself with 5 extra minutes, we won't say no.
We're marketing girlies.
We love the metric.
Well, thanks, guys.
Thanks. Have a great week. Bye.